So the continuation of Fisher Eurasian Economic Union, we would like to ask our beautiful lady from Armenia, Zara, express what she thinks about it, please.
I have a hard job now. I have to disillusion you a little bit on this positive enthusiasm that my colleague was convincing. The first week when we came here, we received all these wonderful books by very distinguished people, some of them with personal signatures, which I thought was really cool. And I just happened to start reading one of them 2 days ago. This book contained a lot of citations from very important people, and I really liked one of them, and I thought this is very accurately describes the situation now. It's one of your military guys, by the way, who said that. He said, "Warning time not used is wasted time. It's like a runaway behind the pilot." I think this is in a nutshell what I would like to convene today. We are now, especially our part of the region, at the crossing of the roads where we cannot waste time. EU has clear problems of functioning. And I also agree with my colleagues, it's a clearly political union. However, I also think that political union should not exclude economic considerations. And this is the purpose of successful union. Unfortunately, I don't think, and that is my personal opinion, my other colleagues may disagree, I really don't think we have too strong economic considerations for joining the EU. And this is purely, to me, this is purely political. And if you look at it, timing, why that specific timing has been selected for the EU? One of the reasons that maybe some of the potential members, they were already negotiating with the EU association agreement, and this was critical for Russia to interfere and make sure that the backyard is still there and they are not losing it to EU, for example. Second one, and I see really big challenges for those new, especially smaller new state countries, because again, labor, we're going to lose a lot of labor force to Russia. So what about our economies? Who's going? The Russians don't think they will come to Armenia to work. It's a big question mark. Plus, countries already are WTO members. For years, we've been negotiating with these entities, with the EU memberships. We've done a lot of reforms, by the way, under USAID, we've done a lot of tax reforms and custom reforms. Now what? This is all not functioning anymore because we don't know what are the rules of the new game is. And I think one of the challenges is that Moscow did not clearly communicate this to our partners, especially Armenia. We don't know about how now this VAT issue is going to be solved, how the trade agreements are going to be tackled, how the customs and the other tax implications are going to be, in the real life, not in the paper. And we cannot stop trade from January 1, the day when Armenia joined the EU officially. It was a mess at the Georgian border because Armenian trucks could not go to Russia because the whole hell of a paperwork that needs to be done. And the whole point of bringing countries into this union under such a rush. I woke up in the morning, I heard about that in the news. I should not hear that on the news. In fact, I should actually go to referendum and choose that Armenia should join the EU. So therefore, there were a lot of political tension in my country because under certain conditions, our president had to do this decision alone. Incompatible market size. And so some of the people we met, and they know it very well. I mean, if you look in the map, the map is not there anymore. Look at the market size of these big countries and where the small countries fit there. And I also have to disillusion that fact, and many economists in my country also say, oh, we will feed the Russian market with Armenian cognac, maybe. we have now big markets. How are we going to do that? We only have certain amount of grapes we can grow. Even if we plant grapes everywhere around Yerevan, we will not feed Russia any further because our capacities are scarce. Our economies are small. We cannot replace EU products to Russia, neither milk nor meat, potatoes. So I'm very skeptical about that thing. And Armenia doesn't even have a common border with the EU countries. I mean, if you look at the map, so we have to somehow go through Georgia. How we do that? Are we going to use Georgia as a transit? I mean, it's a whole big set of questions that needs to be identified. And to me personally, the critical part is that any euro integration process is stopped, or at least will have very limited implication. Now, if I open up the brackets, I mean democracy, I mean business ethics, competition, everything that I observe here, and I observe with my colleagues in Germany, and I love it, and I want that. This is, I really genuinely believe this is the route that all countries should go. Now, whether we will get those values with EU, it's a big question mark, so we have to be on alert. And I think this is the time when we actually have to understand what our values are, because if we lose the momentum, it's always more expensive to correct mistakes than not to make mistakes. So we have to be on alert and make sure that these steps that we have to take for whatever reasons, maybe national security issues, are well thought and not too much compromised, and certain issues we cannot compromise. And by the way, Armenia has 40% of trade with EU. So what does it mean for me as a customer? That means that maybe after 2-3 years, I have to buy only Russian Zhiguli. Because if I want to still drive my Toyota or BMW, I have to pay probably twice as much. So that means my resources are already, my choice is limited by governmental decree, if you will. So I think you all look already so sad, and, you know, you're either listening to me or you're not listening. So I will finish that we either jumping into the fire or we are not moving from the sinking ship, whatever best suits for your interpretation. And I'm not even going to this whole discussion with Russia and the economic sanctions and what are the implications for other countries in the Union, how far it will go. And how Ukraine will have, what kind of impact this whole thing will have on our countries. So I see there are very big challenges. And I hope when we go back and we meet maybe next year for reunion, Dr. Stel will say, well, your challenges were over exaggerated. It wasn't that bad, Zara. So I hope this will happen.
Thank you so much, Zara. We would like our friend from Mongolia, Badrum, express Mongolian perspective on the big powers, especially on China.
Yes, thank you very much, Mir. Good afternoon, everyone. And as you can see, I have the pleasure of talking about and the very easy task of talking about the friendly and benign China that we all know. So as a Mongolian, I certainly have a strong bias. But as a person representing all of the fellows here, and I would like to reiterate that we have 10 fellows here from 8 different countries. Unfortunately, we do not have fellows from Afghanistan or Turkmenistan, but other than that, we have, you know, the Caucasus, Central Asia, and Mongolia represented here. And it was fascinating talking to the other fellows, because I realized that their perception of China is very different from how we perceive China. And so I'll do my best to give both the pros and cons of China's influence on the region. If you look at pure economics and economic growth, China obviously is a huge driver for the region. Same with Mongolia. Mongolia has grown tremendously over the past 5-6 years, mainly due to China. Our main trade partner is China. We export 90% of our goods to China, so we're incredibly dependent on China, but that has fueled the economic growth. And it's the same with the entire region. China has become the largest infrastructure investor and lender for the entire region, investing in infrastructure, highways, railroads, gas pipelines. Turkmenistan is the largest provider of gas to China, providing 45% of their gas. And I saw that China also, in terms of their investments, 80% of their investments are in the energy sector. And everyone knows that our region is especially rich in energy sources. Another important thing that I think needs to be mentioned is that China surpassed Russia as the key trading and main trading partner. And I want to show a kind of graph here that shows that around 2008-2009, China became, in terms of trade volume, the largest trade partner with the region. And I think this is very interesting. And if you look at the graphs, the trade volume was $1 billion in 2000, and by the end of 2014, it was $53 billion. So incredible growth. And of the $53 billion, 45% were exports to China from our countries. Whereas with Russia, at the end of 2014, it was $39 billion, but only 23% was exports to Russia. And it seemed very interesting to look at this graph. It's really kind of just as I was presenting, preparing the presentation, I was going through this. On our program here, meeting with a ton of people in D.C., we didn't really particularly talk about China. But by looking at this, seeing how China has become the biggest trade partner for our region, you would think that there would be a lot more discussion about China and on China. And I think that's where the risk associated with China is that China does things in a way where they don't necessarily make a lot of noise, but you know, they make a lot of ground, and they kind of come in very quietly. So I think of it in a way where, if you think about Russia or EU and the US, if they're gonna visit you, you're sitting at your home, they're gonna call you a month ahead and say, we're gonna visit. Whereas with China, China's already standing right next to you in your living room. And you know, we don't notice it, that's how quiet they are. And that's how strategically sound and smart they are, is that they plan ahead so far that they work little by little, but at the end of the day, they're getting their own kind of goals done. And so, last point here is that, especially for Mongolia, which is, I guess, the only functioning democracy in the entire region, and we only have two neighbors, two very big and scary neighbors in Russia and China. And as a democracy, China is a big threat to us. And obviously, as China wants to, their intent is to really show that their system works and to kind of expand their sphere of influence. They're gonna want to create instability in our country. But I think talking to my colleagues here was also very interesting because I believe the consensus was that China is not an imminent threat, and they are willing to work with the current regime as it is, unlike, I guess, the U.S., which likes to export democracy. But China really works with, and I think it works because a lot of the regimes in the region are authoritarian, and they're willing to work with those authoritarian regimes and really kind of exert their influence slowly but surely, creating dependence. And I think the economic dependence really is a tough aspect, because for Mongolia, as I said, we 90% of our exports go to China, so we really only have one kind of partner, customer. Russia is our competitor in terms of our commodities, so we're mainly trading with China. And when you think about, you know, what this actually means, I just want to kind of give a very small example. Is the Dalai Lama loves, you know, Mongolia, loves traveling to Mongolia. But anytime there's an attempt to visit Mongolia, China just, you know, shuts their border, and we have nothing that we can do really to kind of, you know, go up against that when we're so heavily dependent on them. So I think the same risk exists, although what I find interesting is that for the other countries in the region, China is the third power after Russia, the US, and the EU. China is a very kind of rising kind of power in the region, and they don't see China as exerting that much political influence. But as the economic influence and the economic dependency increases, China will also have the political influence on the different countries. And so I would just like to wrap it up by saying, you know, I think it's pretty evident from at least the four presenters we had here today, but we've had a ton of conversations as a group here over the past 5-6 weeks, and all of our countries face extremely different challenges. I think it's evident here on the China issue that Mongolia, for example, deals with a completely different kind of set of issues. But at the same time, I think it's a region that needs to collaborate, that can collaborate. Historically and culturally, is very similar, and there are certain aspects that need to be kind of really discussed and hopefully moved on in the near future for us to really create that kind of opportunity to work with one another. So this fellowship, really, what the greatest thing about it is connecting kind of the people of different countries in the region that I normally otherwise really didn't have much relations with. So, you know, I'll just close it there.